Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Relentless Pursuit International Radio Show with your admirable, exemplary, exquisite, distinguished, accomplished, superlative, transcendent, distinctive, incomparable, magnificent, paradigmatic, pulchritudinous,
Landis.
Huh?
What are you talking about? What are you doing?
I'm introducing the radio show.
No, with that accent and those words.
I just what thought it would sound good if we spruced it up
if
a little.
If we what? It's 8:30. Ain't nobody got time for that. We got to get this show on the road.
It's the Relentless Pursuit International Radio Show with your hosts, Philandis Harris
and Tamika Sanders. Relentless Pursuit is a faith-based, young adult radio talk show created to bridge the gaps between racial, spiritual, and social divides. We discuss controversial issues that directly hinder the millennial generation from pursuing their God-given purpose.
We want to showcase young adults who are relentlessly pursuing God and their passions in the form of ministry, entrepreneurship, and through their gifts and talents.
Our goal is to equip our listeners with biblical principles that will nurture their dreams and catapult them into their divine destiny.
It's a relentless pursuit.
Good evening, everyone. This is Philandis and
Tamika,
and we just want to thank you for tuning in to Relentless Pursuit tonight, and we give a special thank you to our network owner, Ms. Coach D, for MCD Network. And tonight, we're going to be having our Hour of Empowerment with Master Coach Alfred Simon, and tonight's topic is going to be on the issue of depression. And so we're hoping that if you tuned in, either you or someone that you know will be blessed by this show as we discuss this topic. And I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest here, Mr. Alfred Simon. He's been on the show once before, about 2 months back. We have this segment every last Monday of the month, so the fourth Monday or fifth for certain months. and he is a life coach, and he has his own business called Empowered Coaching, and we're going to allow him to introduce that later, but I just want to go ahead and give him the floor and have him to speak to you all and introduce himself. And so, Alfred, are you there?
I might be.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty swell tonight. How are you?
Pretty good. We're pretty good.
We just want you to go and greet our guests, introduce yourself, let them know who you are and what to expect on tonight's show.
Well, all righty then. Well, my name is Master Coach Alfred Simon. I am the owner and CEO of Empowerment Coaching. We are a company that focuses in on leadership training, team building. We focus in on life coach certification, and we just are really focused in on honing individuals' skills to make them more applicable in life in general. And so we really love working with individuals, helping them work through their goals, reach their promises, reach the things that they want to do in life, and just achieve that thing, that dream that seemed impossible to everybody else. But we believe that with empowerment coaching, and with the right skills and the right tools, anything is possible. So that's what we do here at Empowerment Coaching. And we thank y'all for having us on tonight.
Wow, that sounds like you get people to hit the ground running. That's what I felt like when you were explaining what you do. And so, yeah, we're blessed to have you on the show tonight, especially about this topic, because it's relevant. And I feel like a lot of us in our generation, we battle with this, and it's a secret battle. It's a silent battle. We don't really talk about it. We don't know how to overcome it. And so I guess I want to start with the question of just coming from a life coaching perspective, like what do you think is a good way to identify if we're depressed, if we have to battle with it? Like what are the thoughts that come with being depressed? What are the typical mannerisms that come with being depressed? What do you have to say about that?
Well, see, depression is a tricky subject because when you're looking at depression can manifest in ways in many different forms in a person's life. It can manifest through their eating habits. It can manifest through their relational tendencies. If they're starting to become more lonely, if they're starting to retreat back instead of being the spontaneous, outbursting person that they once were, it can manifest on their job. Maybe they just don't feel like going to work. Maybe just they don't feel like getting up. Sometimes they can just sleep their life away, and they try to, ease the pain of depression with sleeping. Sometimes they'll try to ease the pain of depression with drugs. And so it's a very hard topic to really say specifically what manifests when dealing with depression, because it can manifest in so many different ways. But you know when you're becoming depressed when you begin to stop doing things that you used to love to do, and you begin to implement or try to ease the pain of life with other tools or other ways of doing things that are not healthy. There's nothing wrong, maybe with meditating or praying, if you will. There's nothing wrong with maybe going to hang out with some friends, getting out the house, just to kind of try to ease your mind. But when you start to turn to destructive tendencies in your life to try to ease the pain that you're feeling that might be coming from multiple different sources, it really begins to weigh on the individual, and it really begins to show up even in their physiology. So.
Yeah, I think that's good that you said it manifests in different ways, because I personally have had struggles with depression myself, and as far as I know, there's different levels to it. It's not – all of it isn't chronic. All of it isn't mild. It's on different levels. And so the way that I was able to identify my depression is it was kind of tricky because – a few years ago, it used to manifest itself. I had an emotional eating problem. And so whenever I felt depressed, I would just eat a lot. And on top of that eating, I would always correlate the loneliness and the pain that I was feeling with being tired. And so when someone asked me what was wrong, it was really that I was experiencing some type of emotional pain or I felt lonely, but I would just say that I was tired. But it wasn't that I was tired. It was just the trauma and the turmoil that I was experiencing with my thoughts and my emotions. It was draining, but it wasn't necessarily that I was tired. I was really just depressed. And, you know, as the years passed, it went from manifesting itself to me, for me eating a lot to me not eating at all. I would lose my appetite. And it's funny you said that when you start to get lonely and you stop doing the things that you once enjoyed, I like to hang out with people a lot. And one way that I was able to pinpoint that I was depressed is I was starting to desire isolation more. I became introverted, and I do have introverted tendencies, but on a regular basis, I'm extroverted in the sense that I like to be around people. I like to hang out. I get energy from interacting with other people. And so when I stopped wanting to be around people because I wasn't feeling well, that was another way for me to indicate, like, okay, something's going on. Anytime I don't feel like hanging out with people, or, you know, I'm losing my appetite when I used to just love to eat, there was something going on. So I agree with you when you say isolation and your eating habits.
And to piggyback off of her, I experienced depression in college too. And my ways of expressing that, I was the sleep your life away person. Like, literally, my roommates, you know, they didn't know what was going on. And at the time, I don't even think I knew what was going on. I really just thought I was always sleepy and tired. And, you know, I never correlated that to being depressed until I actually got out of it and looked back and say, you know, that's probably what was going on. But they would be like, you know, Tamika, you sleep more than anybody I know. You sleep. So all you do is sleep. You're the laziest person. And it wasn't that I was lazy. It wasn't that I was always sleepy. I was really depressed. And to get rid of the agony of feeling whatever pain that you're feeling, sleep was the only way to escape that.
Yeah.
And so also with emotional, I was the person that instead of binging and eating, I would not eat. And so I was extremely thin and sleeping all the time. So it was a bad combination. But so those are very much some indicators to determining, you know, if you are depressed. And I think a lot of people can be depressed and not even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important that they examine themselves and examine their lives and what their habits are to see, okay, this may not be normal.
Yeah. Yep. And so, that you actually, in that little tidbit that you said, you answered a lot of questions that I was going to ask you, but I just want you to touch more on them anyway. And so with identifying, you know, different ways that depression can manifest in our lives, like, do you think that depression has the ability to negatively affect our ability to healthily participate in our relationships? Like, does it affect how we're able to be sociable? Like, whenever we're feeling that way, do you think that it negatively affects it or positively affects it, or how do you think that depression affects those things?
Well, when we're looking at relationships, again, that's a tricky subject too, but yes, it can manifest in a multiple variety of different ways in relationships, because it will affect the relationship in the area of, maybe if you're married, it'll affect your love life. If you're in just a simple relationship, maybe with a boyfriend or girlfriend, it'll affect communication. Maybe you won't want to hang out or see them as much. Maybe you'll want to be simply lonely if it's with your family. A lot of people tend to pull away from your family, and I always tell people that the worst thing to do when you're in a state of depression or when you're dealing with depression is to put yourself in a place of isolation. You always want to make sure that you're surrounded with people. You want to make sure that you're never putting yourself in a place where you're just alone, especially if you're dealing with suicide and depression, because a lot of times suicide comes along with that suicidal tendencies, maybe suicidal thoughts. So it's just a wide range or variety of things that come along with depression, especially in the form of relationships. Go on.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just saying, you know, friends, you know, just different things, different forms of relationships have different ways of seeing how that really affects their lives. and how that really affects that relationship that they have. And so it just really depends on what relationship we're looking at.
Yeah, and I think in my case, because whenever I was the isolator. When I get depressed, I would isolate. You wouldn't hear from me. I wouldn't call you or text you. I wouldn't want to hang out or anything. And so for people that are listening that may know someone or be in a relationship with someone, whether it's a friendship or romantic, what would you say to them when that person that they care about is going through that that isolation? Because I know that when you're depressed, it's easy to just isolate and to just kind of check out and drop off the face of the earth. So even though that's the worst decision to make when you're in that state, I know from experience that it's not always easy to not do that. And so what would you say to people who have loved ones that are depressed and they're constantly being pushed away? Like, what do you think that should they continue to be consistent in reaching out to them, or should they kind of give them their space, or what do you think that they should do?
The first thing, it depends on if you know for sure that they're dealing with depression. Most people don't know that their loved one is dealing with depression. And because mm-hmm. they don't know, they don't know how to handle the situation. You know, they get hurt. Their feelings are hurt. They get in pain because, you know, oh, they don't want to hang out with me. They don't love me anymore. They don't want to talk to me anymore. They don't trust me anymore. You know, all these things are going through people's heads, because the first thing that pops in my head, if I'm a friend or if I'm a family member or if I am a spouse, I'm not going to think, oh, they're depressed. That's not what's going to pop in my head. I'm going to think, oh, you know, they're starting to change. They're like the young people say, they're acting brand new. You know, it's just certain things like that I'm going to start thinking. I'm not going to think about depression. And so I believe that everybody on the call, whether you're dealing with depression or not, has to at least know the signs of it so that they can be more sensitive to what the individual is going through. If I'm a person that's constantly getting pushed away, I need to know, hey, is this person dealing with depression, or, you know, are they just changing in life? Maybe we just don't have the same connection we used to have. But a lot of times people are dealing with depression and the other person does not know it. And so with that, you have to be very careful on how you're approaching the individual. When they're pushing you away, you can't get hurt and offended by it, because they're going through something on the inside. They're going through something internally, and you don't know how that looks. You don't know how that feels. And so you just have to be very critical of the situation and very attentive to it, and make sure that you are showing love constantly through the entire process. Whether they're mean, whether they're mad, whether they're angry, whether they're sad, you continue to show love. You continue to love that individual back to life. That's one of the things that we like to talk about here in Empowerment Coaching, is loving the individual back to life. If you can love the individual back to life and show them that true inner love, that true inner connection that everybody longs for within somebody else, it helps to build that person back up, and it helps them get through that process of depression and low self-esteem and just, you know, self-management in general. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, and also just wanted to throw, you know, loving that person back to life. I like that. And with that, there's also, you know, a fine line that you're not that person's not becoming codependent on you, that in your loving, you're still pushing them to be themselves, and to ultimately, if they, once they realize maybe they're depressed, seek some help. You know, loving someone to life is not can be going to counseling with them, you know, just supporting them, not, you know, not being the void filler. You know, because a lot of people that are depressed, they're looking for some way to fill the void, and they may be filling that void with the relationship or with the other person. So just being careful that it's not becoming a situation where you're just there filling this person's void, and when you leave, they are worse off. But also being there to support them and helping them to get help, you know, supporting them and getting help, maybe seeking counseling or, you know, seeking, praying for them or offering some type of help. I know that from experience, it's very difficult to be in a relationship with someone who's depressed, you know, and then it's difficult to be in a relationship with someone who's depressed who don't know they're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And then also to be in a relationship with someone who's depressed that knows they're depressed, don't want to get help with their depression.
Yeah.
There's only so much that you can love a person before you're depleted and you're like, okay, well, I need some return. And if that person's depressed, you know, they may not feel like loving you back. And, you know, in a marriage situation, those things are different than, you know, like you said, in a boyfriend or girlfriend relationship. You know, in a marriage situation, yeah, you've committed to loving that person and helping them and being one with them. So you're going through all the emotions with them. Where if it's a girlfriend boyfriend relationship, that may not be the case, and what the approach, you know, may be different. So yeah, it's just making sure that people have that balance.
And I totally agree. And I will tell you something. This is something that me and my wife talked about earlier, is that in these type of situations, and not to be, you know, and staying away from even the spiritual concept of it, I believe that an individual has to be whole enough to be able to help somebody else reach back to that level of wholeness within themselves. And so I would never suggest an unwhole individual trying to help somebody become or get back to that place of sufficiency or that place of you know, wholeness that other person might not even be in. Because whenever you're dealing with somebody with depression, two half people are not going to be able to help somebody become whole. Does it make sense? And so we're looking with that, you know, you can't expect a person who is being depressed to love you back. And that's not why you're there. You're not there expecting them to return something to you. You're there to give it to them in hopes that they will now become whole. And they'll reach that place eventually where they can give it back to you. Me and my wife were talking about it earlier. You know, sometimes we do things and we expect things back from people. But when it comes to the true love that we are really supposed to show individuals from the inside, from the internal, from that place of being whole, we can't expect things back. And it's not our place to expect things back, because we're doing it out of a freeness of love, a freeness of giving, and just the freeness of, you know, not, you know, sometimes we want it back, but we can't expect it back, if that makes sense. We'll want it, but we have to understand that we have to be whole in ourselves, that if no one else loves us, that we're good with ourselves and that we're still loving ourselves. Love is not always reciprocated, but that doesn't mean that it still can't be given. And that's what I was saying, is that just, you know, just we're dealing with depressed individuals, it won't always be reciprocated, and you can't expect reciprocation of love back. Even in relationships, you can't expect it back because they're depressed. They're dealing with something internally, and so you just have to be whole enough inside of yourself to know, hey, even though they're not giving me what I feel like I deserve, I'm good enough in myself to know that I do deserve it, and I got it, even though it's not coming from them.
Exactly. That's good. So, Alfred, what would you say are some causes for depression?
I've met some people who are depressed, and they don't even know why they're depressed, and many times they're depressed because of things that have happened in their life that they really haven't confronted. And those are root issues, and I call them root issues. There are many root issues in people these days that they haven't confronted some things that happened from their childhood, maybe some things that happened from a past relationship, maybe some things that they did that they still haven't forgiven themselves for, you know, and then what might not have been a good thing, it might have been wrong. They might have messed up. They might have slept around with somebody. It could be a variety of different things. They might have committed something or killed somebody and nobody knows. It might be a variety of different things. I've had clients who've had some stories, let me tell you. But the main thing is approaching the situation, finding out what it is that is causing the depression and fixing it. Sometimes, you know, it's a simple answer. Sometimes it's because a family member died. Sometimes it's because they lost a job. Sometimes it's because they just got through going through a divorce. Sometimes it's because their kids are putting them in that situation. And so it's easy to identify. But the harder cases, it's not as easy to identify, because it's things that are rooted inside of the individual that they still have not let go of. I found some individuals that treat their kids wrong, that treat their kids bad because they still haven't dealt with things that was done to them when they were a child. And, you know, and they are depressed, and through that depression they become angry, and through that anger they then begin to hurt other people. And so, you know, it just, you have to get down to the root of the issue of where it's actually coming from, so that you can really become free from that root and from that situation, so that you can find your wholeness in life.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's a good thing to think about, because when I think about that in my own life, like where my depression came from, it wasn't necessarily that something had just happened. That it was like when I was actually paused to sit down and think about why am I depressed and, you know, what causes it? First of all, I realized that that was my state of being for a very long time. So it was normal. It was so normal that, you know how Tamika mentioned not knowing that you're depressed? And sometimes people might wonder, like, well, how don't you know you're depressed? Well, if it's your normal, if you're always been you're always depressed and you have been since you can remember, that's your normal. So it's not going to be something that you realize. And that was the same thing for me. I had been in a state of depression, whether it was on a small level or a large scale level, since I was a kid. And when I was forced to sit down and think about it, it was from things that happened in my childhood that I kind of just stuffed. You know, I never acknowledged it. I never allowed myself to really express it. It just happened, and I kept going. And whatever emotional trauma or pain that it caused, I never expressed it. And so years of that building up and then more things happening to contribute to that, it made it worse. And so I think that's a really good thing to think about. Like, where does it come from? Did it happen when a specific event happened, or has this been your norm? I think that that's a great place to start.
And sometimes in coaching, it gets very difficult because people have blocked off areas of their mind to knowing certain areas that have happened to them. They try to hide it behind just walls that they've built up internally to where they don't even think about it themselves. And you have to go through those walls sometimes, and it hurts. I'm also a minister, and so one of the things that we talked about, you know, sometimes you have to dig. You have to dig deeper. And the digging process hurts. It doesn't feel good. You don't like it half the time, and it's going to be something that's going to cause you, it's going to cost you something. It might end up costing you your relationship. It's going to cost you some things. It might cost you your family. You know, it might cost you your family because your family, you're now revealing what your uncle did to you, and everybody might not believe it. Everybody might not like it, but it's something that has to be dealt with so that you can be free. And so, you know, it's a deep process, and it's a hard process, but it's a process that's worth it so that you can become the whole individual that you were always meant to be. And being whole, when I talk about being whole, I'm talking about being in a state of unity in both spirit, body, and mind. And those are three different areas. And so you have to understand the three different areas to know how to be whole in both spirit, body, and mind, the three sectors of an individual. And so,
yeah, and with that, I think, and this, I'm saying this from experience, but also people that I've come across, one of the questions that I was going to ask is if you believe that there's a relationship between self-esteem and depression. And what I mean by that is, I'll just speak from my experience. I'm not going to speak for anyone else. But when I was still in the midst of battling, overcoming my depression, I had really low self-esteem. I didn't think good of myself. I didn't think I was good at anything. And as a result of that, I could never receive compliments from other people. Like, if someone complimented me because I was good at speaking or I was good at drawing or whatever, if they gave me a compliment, I would never be able to receive it because of the way that I viewed myself. But it came from my depression because of how I was feeling, not just about my life, but how I was feeling about myself, like what happened to me. Like I said, when I was forced to sit down and identify when I first became depressed, it was because of something that happened to me. And so if something happens to you and it's traumatizing and you never deal with it, you never express the way that you feel as a result of that occurrence, it affects the way that not only you see your life, but you kind of develop a negative outlook on yourself. And so what do you think about that? What do you think about the relationship between self-esteem and depression?
A whole individual, and like I don't know, that's just one of the concepts that we use as a whole individual, and that's why I keep referring back to it. But a whole individual, depression cannot live in the same temple or the same body or the same vessel, if you may, as low self-esteem. It's They can live in the same vessel, but high self-esteem and depression cannot live in the same vessel or the same temple. When looking at that, if you have depression, most likely you have – no, actually not most likely. I'm sorry. You do 100% have low self-esteem somewhere on the inside of you. You're insecure about some area of your life, and sometimes that insecurity will come off as pride or will come off as overly trying to accommodate for something that you're lacking in an area of. You will be mean to individuals, saying that I'm better than you, or pumping up yourself all the time because you're trying to pump up an area in yourself that you know that you really are not that confident in. And so even depression can sometimes be rooted with a pride issue, and you can sometimes see that depression circulating or seen through that type of avenue. And so it just, yes, for sure, low self-esteem is a sign of depression, and depression is a sign of low self-esteem. So I think they really are interchangeable, vice versa. So,
yeah, I agree. Because, I mean, during the times that I experienced depression, I remember distinctively in those seasons, you know, I didn't want to get up and get dressed and do my hair and look pretty, and someone said you look nice. It was like, for real, really? You know, and so I definitely, you know, in those times, have a lack of care about things that you normally would care about, whether they live in. I know during those times, distinctively during the times of being depressed, those were probably the times that my environment was probably the messiest in my living space as well as in my car. And I've heard people say that, you know, your living space can come out with depression inward. And what you're dealing with on the inside will sometimes be portrayed on the outside in your appearance, in your living space, in your car, and everything around you. So I definitely agree with you. And I also wanted to touch on something that you said a little earlier about digging deeper and opening the wound. Bishop said something one time is that, well, actually, no, this was Dr. Jazz Shulark, and she said that God can't heal what you conceal, so he has to reveal it so that he can heal it. And sometimes he'll put situations in our heart that have forced those wounds to be open so that he can clean it out. And I remember my dad, when I moved to live with him and allowed that relationship to be healed, he used a similar analogy. You know, if you go and you have an infection, you know, you go to the doctor, they're going to, you know, remove the outer layer of your skin, really get a scalpel and dig deep and get all of the infectious bacteria out of that wound. And it's not going to feel good in the time that he's cleaning it out. But in order for you to get healing and get the right stuff in, you have to get the wrong stuff out, and you have to go through the process of cleaning and digging and removing all of the excess junk that's in there. And God can put the right things in there, and before he can heal it, he has to open the wound, reveal the wound to you, clean it out, and then start putting the right things in it to heal it, and then allow time for it to the wound to what's it called?
Heal?
I mean, yeah, but you know, everything going to the pack where the skin is growing back and everything is back to normal, everything's back intact. So, but I definitely agree with you, Alfred, on that. We just want to do a short intermission.
Yeah, so if you're just tuning in, we are doing our Hour of Empowerment with Master Coach Alfred Simon. And tonight's
that would be
topic,
me.
And tonight's topic is depression. We're identifying what depression is, how it shows up in our lives in different ways. What are some of the causes of it, and how it affects our ability to be in relationship. And we just wrapped up how it affects our self-esteem. And I like what Tamika said about correlating your living space to being a manifestation of what's going on in your mind. And there was this powerful, anointed young lady named Taylor. She told me one time that, and that's Alfred's wife, by the way. I didn't want to.
My God. Is her name Taylor?
Yeah, her name's Taylor. And she told me one time that, you know, when I was actually going through a period of feeling down, and the first question she asked me, she said, "What does your room look like?" And I was like, "What? Like, what does that have to do with what I'm talking about?" And she said, "No, seriously, what does your room look like?" And I told her it was messy, and she said, "You need to clean it up." And she went on to explain to me that when your room and the space that you're in, when it's clear, when it's clean, when it's put together and tidy, it clears your mind. It helps you to think more clearly. It helps you feel better. You can breathe again. And now I live by that. You know, whenever my room gets junky or cluttered, I clean it up because that's a sign that, you know, my mind hasn't been as clear as I would like it to be. And every time I do it, it makes things easier for me. And so, yeah, I definitely agree with that when she was talking about the living space. And
I just want to give our guests an opportunity. If there are any listeners, callers on the line that have questions for Master Coach Alfred on the topic of this depression, if you're struggling with depression, if you just need clarity about your situation, go ahead and press 1. He'll be glad to answer any questions that you may have.
All right.
And we're going to continue on with the – yeah.
I'll be semi-glad.
You'll be semi-glad. with that, I just wanted to share with our listeners some practical ways that I overcame and I'm still overcoming depression, because I don't struggle with it as nearly as much as I used to, but I still have my moments. So one of the ways that helps me most with overcoming my depression, or when I start feeling that, what helps me to get rid of it is I need to pay attention to the thoughts that are going through my mind. And for me, it was normal for my mind to just run rampant with whatever. Like, I could think 2 million different thoughts in 60 seconds. And I'm not exaggerating. Like, I would think about things that were so unrelated that if I told you what was going through my mind, you would look at me like I was crazy. But in my mind, I knew how they connected, but in reality, it doesn't really make sense. And so I had to identify what thoughts are going through my mind. What have I been dwelling on? What have I been telling myself mentally? And most of the time, I would be mentally rehearsing things that happened a long time ago and thinking, well, dang, if I wouldn't have done that or made that decision, then I probably would have been able to do this better. And dang, that was a stupid decision. Like, just thoughts that were full of regret, thoughts that were full of like tormenting memories. And when I say tormenting, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm remembering something that was traumatic, but tormenting in the sense that it's just plaguing my mind. Like, my mind is just going over it over and over and over and over. And so once I identify what thoughts are in my mind, I'm able to speak to myself out loud and say, hey, listen, we're not going to continue to waste valuable brain cells and youthfulness on these things that aren't going to change. I can't change the past. I can't change decisions that I've already made. And so I need to think on things that are positive, think on things that help me to feel positive. Like, I don't want to think about things that are going to make me angry or make me sad. Like, what can I think about that's going to make me feel refreshed? And so that's one important,
that is good,
practical way to overcome it. And
it reminded me of Joyce Meyer. She had one preacher, and she would always say, think about what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the times we think and just random stuff go through our mind, and, you know, a whole 30 minutes can pass, and you'll be like, hold on, what was I just thinking about?
Yep.
And so she often would say, think about what you're thinking about. And really all that means is take some time to really think and process, okay, what was just going through my mind in this moment? I'm feeling sad. you know, 5 minutes ago I was just laughing and joking. Now I'm feeling sad. What happened in those 5 minutes? What was I? What thought went through my mind? What was I thinking? And it probably 9 times out of 10 was something negative, something bad, something that you maybe regretted, a decision, you know, in your life that you are ashamed of or something like that, or something that hurt you, a painful memory. And so I think that is a good place to start when identifying the ways to overcome depression is to think about what you're thinking about. What is going through your mind? You know, you don't have to just let anything, you don't have to just dwell on anything that enters your mind, you know. So, Alfred, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I totally am in agreement with you. You have to train your mind, and that's possible. It's possible. People don't think that, I can't control what goes through my mind. Yes, you can. You can control your thoughts. You can control what goes through your mind. You just have to become disciplined. And a lot of times, I'm going to be honest, what human beings lack a lot of times is discipline. And that's why we can't achieve our goals. That's why we can't get what we want to get in life, is because we are not disciplined. And it's not going to be until we become disciplined that we're going to find true stability, true freedom, true happiness, because all of that is found in a stable mind, in a disciplined body. A lot of times we get sick. Why? Because we're not disciplined in our body. We don't eat the right things. We don't consume the right foods. A lot of times we don't consume the right things in our minds. So whatever you're feeding your mind is what's going to come out of you. You know, the Bible even says a scripture like that. You know, you got to watch what goes in you. You have to watch what you're feeding yourself. And so you have to monitor what is around you. You have to monitor who's in your environment. Monitor the friends you keep. Monitor the company you keep. Monitor the people that you're listening to. Monitor the music that you're listening to. If you're constantly listening to music about killing somebody and you know, having relations with somebody, you know, all these different things, whatever you're feeding yourself, that's what's going to end up coming out of you. And so what I would suggest to everybody on the call is to do a 3-week cleanse or a 21-day cleanse. That's what I like to call it, the 21-day master fast. 21-day master fast, and it is you cleansing your body, food, mind, body, soul. So you body, food, what's entering in. Make sure that you're working out on a decent schedule at least 3 to 4 times a week. Then you have your mind, making sure that you're reading, you're working your mental capacity, you're expanding your mental capacity, that you're reading at least 1 or 2 a day. You're doing something productive with your mind. There are certain apps that actually get your mind productive. Do something productive with your mind, and then spirit. Do some kind of spiritual exercise that will help you grow spiritually, whether that's meditation, whether that's yoga, whether that's your prayer, whatever it is. Find your balance in life. Do the master fast and begin to create a new healthy you, to begin to create a new whole you so that you can be shown to the world in a new light. But you can't be shown to the world in a new light until a new you is created.
No, that's good. And that reminds me, I saw a post on Facebook like maybe a few days ago, and it said, "Don't believe everything that you think." And I think it's kind of foreign to someone if they've never really taken time to think about the things they think about. Like, it doesn't seem logical to scrutinize the thoughts that go through your mind because you trust your own thoughts, you trust yourself. And the post just said, don't believe everything that you think. And when I thought about it, I was like, that's good. Because everything that you think isn't a reflection of reality. It isn't always true. You could be thinking through a frame of brokenness, a frame of hurt, a frame of anger. And when you're thinking through those, I guess, perspectives, it doesn't reflect what's actually true. And so, yeah, I definitely agree with that about what did you say? Watch what you're feeding yourself. And what you're feeding yourself could just be a reference to what you're allowing to go through your mind. Because I could sit and think all day about something somebody said that came off offensive to me. But in reality, what they said wasn't offensive. And the way that they said it wasn't offensive, it was how I interpreted it. It was how I heard it. That it was probably triggered from a place of something that happened in the past. And so I could go over in my mind. Oh, go ahead.
No. Please, continue.
No, I was just going to say I could go over something in my mind all day and just rehearse what that person said, but I'm thinking about it in a frame of offense, but it has nothing to do with them. It's something that happened before that I'm understanding it through, so it's not necessarily true, you know?
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
No, I didn't hear anything.
I'm sorry, I'm about to say, I absolutely agree with you, and I'm going to say another thing is that us right now, in the age that we live in, we are living in a controlled society. And what do I mean by that? You know, people don't like to, you know, people are very stereotypical or very, they shy away from believing that society uses tricks on the mind to make us want to do things. And anytime you are an individual ruled by society, then you're always going to be caught in stereotypical environments, or you're always going to be caught doing stereotypical things. When I say that, look at the advertising that's on TV. My wife is a brand strategist. She does branding. They put something in front of you multiple times, and then for some odd reason, you want to go buy a kitchen tool that you probably will never use, that you probably, because you don't even cook. So why do you want to go buy a cooking tool that you're never going to use? Why? Because they put it before you so many times, and now it's registered in your mind to make you think about it and to make you actually want to purchase it. What am I saying? I'm saying a lot of times, like I said, you got to watch what you feed yourself, because if we're putting all of this stuff that society is feeding us through our mind, what is it that we're actually doing that's productive, that is breaking us away from the mold that society is trying to place us in? Society wants us to be spenders. They don't want us to be savers. They want us to be broke. They don't want us to be rich. You know, you have to make sure that you are putting yourself outside of the mold of society so that you can be able to actually have a mind of your own, think for yourself, make logical decisions, smart decisions that will impact you for generations and not just for now. Because we live in a society that is microwaved. We want everything now. We want fame now. We want stuff now. We want money now. We want ministry now. We want everything now, but we haven't went through the process of actually being prepared for that which we are trying to gain. And so I'm saying that you have to, as an individual, make sure that you are putting yourself outside of the mold of society that they're trying to put you in, and make sure that you're creating yourself, or make sure that you're getting yourself prepared so that you can actually make the impact and make the things that you actually want to make.
Yeah, and that reminds me. The example that you used about the advertisement, honestly, and this people may not agree initially, but I'm going to explain what I mean. I think that the way advertisement is used, it's in a biblical way, but it's perverted a lot of times. And what I mean by that is the Bible says that faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. But faith can also come by hearing. It doesn't matter what you're hearing. If you hear something over and over and it's constantly before you, it's constantly shown to you, whether that's literally or through images in your mind, you're going to start to have faith in whatever is being shown to you. And so if you have that advertisement that's shown to you 3 or 4 times a day, 7 days a week, and in the advertisement, they're telling you why you need this tool, even though you know you don't cook. It's if you're hearing it constantly, I need this tool because it's the best quality knife, fork, can opener in the world. It's going to start making me disregard the fact that I don't cook. It's going to make me start thinking like, well, maybe I could, maybe this will help me start cooking if I buy it. And so it's like you're building faith in what's being shown to you. And it's like a direct example of the scripture to me. It's just not in the way that God intended it, I assume. But, yeah, it's like whatever you're being shown, whatever is constantly in your mind, that's what your belief system is built in. So if you have a low self-image or you mentally rehearse a wrong that was done to you, you're going to believe that thing is true. You're going to believe that what was done to you, you deserve that because it happened. And you're going to believe that the way that it made you feel, it doesn't matter because you weren't able to express how you felt. Like it's it's just really powerful how the mind works. And so I definitely agree with what you're saying there with the way the advertisement works in the society and how they've, the revelation that they have of advertisement and how it works and how it can influence people and their behavior.
And I wanted to just go back to something Philanda said as it relates to your thinking and depression and how something can happen in your life that may not be offensive, but the way that you perceived it could trigger the depression, or the way that you perceived it could come across offensive. And one thing that I have to say is a lot of times when we're hurt and when we're depressed, our perception of reality is skewed. And the way that we perceive things, the way that we understand things, the way that we think about things is a lot of times misconstrued when we're depressed, we're hurt, when we're emotional about something. And I was a big victim of that. You know, my perception of reality was way off because I was looking at life through the lens of my depression or through the lens of my hurt or through the lens of my disappointment or through the lens of whatever was in my life that I didn't have. And in my case, it was, you know, my relationship with my father that I desired that I did not have. And so everything through life was looking at it from that perspective. And so the way that I even received love, like when we're talking about loving people, a lot of times when you're depressed, it's hard to receive love.
Mm-hmm.
Not, yeah, okay, thinking about trying to love somebody is already an almost seem impossible, but receiving love in that time is hard as well. So I just wanted to really touch on that. A lot of times your perception of reality is off when you're going through depression. And so it's good to talk to people to be like, okay, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm seeing. Does this sound normal?
Yeah, that's good. No, that's really good because I do that.
That
sometimes.
Is good.
And like, because a lot of times I can have a conversation with someone and I ask a lot of questions. So when somebody says something to me and it doesn't really make sense, and even if I don't get the chance to ask them what they meant, I'll go to someone else and explain to them my interpretation of what they said, and I ask the person, like, does that seem right that I interpret it that way, or am I misinterpreting? And so it is good to scrutinize the way that you receive information, the way that you process information, and your interpretation of things. And I was going to say another practical way of overcoming your depression, aside from the thinking about what you're thinking about, is for me, I was an isolator when I was depressed, and so a practical way would be practicing not doing what I would usually do when I was depressed, and that was hard because I mean if I'm not feeling it and I just want to be closed up in my room, that's comfortable, and so I would have to challenge myself not to do that. And that's another practical way. Is, I mean, it may not be as easy said than it is done, but that's another practical way. So if the environment that you're used to retreating to in your depression is one where it's dark and it's lonely and you're by yourself and you're just alone with your thoughts, you want to challenge yourself to maybe go in a public place where there's people, even if you don't talk to anybody, just go where there's other human beings and you hear other voices other than the voices in your head with your thoughts. And just get some different energy going that you can glean from, because I would do that when I was still in college. If I was feeling depressed, instead of staying in my room and like shutting my curtains and turning on Netflix with the lights off, I would go and sit in a McDonald's for like 5 hours. And my friends would be like, why are you at McDonald's? And I couldn't really explain it to them, but I needed to go because there were people there. And I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't really interact with anybody. It was just the point that I saw other people. They were lively. I could hear their voices. I could pick up on just the energy that they were giving off. And it would help me to overcome, even if for a short period of time. And Yeah, so that's another practical way. I'm not sure, Alfred, if you had another way that you wanted to contribute to the list that we're given here.
I totally agree with you. I mean, you know, you just have to make sure that you're around good energy. It's about putting yourself around positive people, positive energy, positive things that are going to uplift your spirit and not tear you down. If you know that you're dealing with depression because of financial issues, don't go look at your bills in the middle of the night when ain't nobody around. You know, I mean, you know, there's just certain things that you just shouldn't do. You know, if you know you're dealing with emotional problems due to a relationship, you know, don't go calling your exes in the middle of the night trying to, you know, get them back while you're halfway drunk or hot. You know, it's just certain things that you just shouldn't do when you're, you know, under that depression. And so, yeah, I would say you just make sure that the environment that you're in, it's a journey. It's not something that's going to be fixed overnight. It's not something that's going to happen just right at that exact moment that you start to change. You can say that, you know, I want to change, but it's a journey to change. It's a process. It's something that's going to take some time. It's going to take effort. It's going to take you some responsibility. Responsibility in making sure that you're doing your part to be free from the thing that you want to be free from. Freedom costs. It's not free. I know that's the kind of a play on words, but freedom costs. Freedom is not free. You can't get free by putting nothing in, but it's a cost to it. And sometimes it costs you, like I said, it costs you people around you. It costs you things that you might like to do that are destructive. It's going to cost change, and a lot of people don't see that, but it costs them to embrace new realities instead of their so comfortable with right now. And so, you know, it's just a process, it's a journey, and it's a beautiful journey because at the end of the day, you're going to find your wholeness, you're going to find your freedom, and you're going to find that longing that you've been searching for on the inside. So, like I said, it's just a journey that you just have to endure.
Yes. And, yeah, I definitely agree with that, that the freedom it costs. And I know we're kind of, we've got like 3 minutes left, but one last thing that I wanted to say is that it's good that you said that freedom costs, because what I'm hearing through our discussion is that depression, it creates habits. And really, to kind of summarize, the way to get free from depression and to overcome it is to create other habits, to create healthier habits, to create the opposite habits that you already have. And so it would be good to identify what habits your depression has created. Like, has it created a habit for you to isolate? Has it created a habit for you to push people away? Or has it created a habit for you to either overeat or undereat? Like, what habits has your depression created? And once you identify those habits, you have to figure out what the opposite of that would be. So if you eat too much when you're depressed and you know that that's what you go to is food, you need to watch your intake. What are you eating? How much are you eating? What time of day are you eating? And then if you isolate, then you have to know that when you feel like, I just want to be by myself, okay, that's an indication that you're probably having a depressed moment and you need to go and be around people. And so if you push people away because you don't want anybody to be there for you, why don't you practice allowing someone to ask, are you okay, and practice being honest. Don't just say, yeah, I'm fine, I'm good, I'll be all right. Just be honest, be vulnerable. And so I think that's the most important thing too, like, identify what habits your depression has created in your life and work on consistently exercising healthier habits. And, Alfred, was there anything, like any last remarks that you wanted to make as we're wrapping up the show?
No, I totally agree. You have to find that. That's true. You have to find out what's habitual in your life. And you have to find the turning point. I think that's very significant, the turning point. Because the turning point helps find the root. There are really three areas that you have to focus for when dealing with depression. One is the root, one is the turning point, and one is the current or the present. And if you find the turning point, at what point did I start being depressed? Have I been depressed all my life, or is this something that just recently happened? Did it start last year? Did it start 6 months ago? You need to find the turning point. You need to go back to that time, see when you what you were doing, what you were thinking about, what happened, who were you around. Maybe you can ask them. Maybe they can help you remember what you were doing around that time so that you can just kind of trying to get back that memory of why did I become depressed around this specific time. And that will help you find the root of your issue. And once you find the root, we can start dealing with the present issue of actually being depressed because we can actually get through all of the crud and the crap that is, you know, in front of us and actually deal with what's really going on inside of you as an individual. So.
Yep. So that's good. I like that summary of the whole discussion and how to overcome it. And we just want to thank you for being on the show, for giving us this powerful discussion. I pray that it helps someone. And just before we end the call, can you tell our listeners how to reach you, how to contact you, where to follow you at, where are you at on social media?
Well, my name is Master Coach Alfred Simon, and I'm located here in the DFW Metroplex, that is Dallas-Fort Worth, for all of you individuals who might not know. Online, you can find me at Empowerment. Hey, just to let y'all know, I changed my website address. Praise God. So it's not Empowered C anymore. It's empowermentcoaching.org. Praise Lord. All right, just wanted to let y'all know that. So empowermentcoaching.org, you can find me on empowermentcoaching.org. You can also go to Facebook. Find me at Empowerment Coaching, Twitter at Empowerment Coaching, and Twitter is at Empower to Impact, and Instagram is at Empowerment Coaching. And Periscope, don't forget Periscope. I'm trying to do more with Periscope. I'm trying to get into the video lane, try to impact some more people through videos. And so make sure you follow me on Periscope also. That is at Empower to, the number two. Impact, the same as my Twitter. So that's how you can get in contact with me. You can also email me at info@empowermentcoaching.org.
All righty then. Well, I hope you guys take advantage of that information. This will conclude tonight's show, our Hour of Empowerment with Master Coach Alfred Simon. We want to extend a special thank you to Coach D, our network owner of MCD Network, and we want to invite you guys to tune back in next Monday at the same time, 8:30 Central Standard Time, 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, and 6:30 Pacific Standard Time for our Girl Talk segment, and we hope you were blessed, and we pray that you have a great night. Thank you for tuning in.